Welcome to Casterbus. I'm Christian Corley. This is a weekly update of all the sort of interesting retro culture, TV, movie, game stuff that's going on at the moment. There might be a tiny bit of Doctor Who in these podcasts occasionally, but there won't be in this one, I don't think, looking at what we're going to be discussing. James and I are working on a series of Doctor Who specific podcasts, and I'm hoping to have a bit more information about that for you over the coming weeks. James and I will also be recording in about half an hour's time for a new podcast that's coming up soon as well. But what are we talking about today? Well, I'm just going to crack on into it. We're going to kick off with news of a little bear. Sales of Paddington Bear-themed vintage collectibles have unsurprisingly rocketed since the release of the new movie. If you own one of those old Paddington Bears, they are going for quite a bit of cash on auction sites and collectible sites. There's one that I've been informed about called vintagecashcow.co.uk. Great name. And basically, it's somewhere that you can go to. It's like an eBay, but it's for old stuff. Okay. So, it's got a slightly complicated and convoluted sign-up. But you can go to eBay and have a look at the prices, which I'm doing right now. And a Paddington Bear... Wow. Okay, so there's a brand new plush Paddington that's £275. That's not even the type that we're talking about. We're talking about the ones from the old days. They're going for about twice as much as what they were going for a few weeks ago. So they are rocketing. And if I just try Paddington Bear toy 1970, see what that does. There we go. Not so much Paddington toys, but there's an Aunt Lucy toy, which is currently got a price of £220. That's a 1970s Aunt Lucy. So, yeah, I mean, this kind of thing isn't particularly surprising. Really, Paddington toys date back 50 years, are in higher demand than those that are more recent, clearly. But there are, of course, sort of like luxury level things like the plush one that I mentioned earlier. Vintage Barbie dolls, classic Lego sets and other toys that still work in Tamagotchis if they haven't died or the battery hasn't leaked or whatever. These older toys, they all do well when there is a particular sort of cultural aspect underpinning interest. In this case, it's Paddington. A few years ago, it was a Lego movie. Transformer toys do well when there's a new Transformers movie coming out. Doctor Who merchandise did very well last year, although not as well as it did in 2013. That's a bit of a curiosity, isn't it? Why was there less interest in Doctor Who merchandise in 2060 than for the 60th in 2023 than there was for the 50th in 2013? It's a curiosity, shall we say. So, yeah, so if you own old Paddington toys, cuddly toys, their value has increased. So it's probably a good idea to take care of them and make sure that they are looked after well. There's a Paddington that was a talking Paddington from the 1980s or late 70s. That's going for £99.99 on eBay. It's so yeah, these prices are going up. And of course, there is a new Paddington movie hitting the cinemas at the moment. You can go out and see it pretty much any time, Paddington in Peru, which again stars Hugh Bonneville as Henry Brown, Ben Whishaw as Paddington, and Julie Walters as Mrs. Bird, etc., etc., etc. So that's Paddington Bear. If you own Paddington Bear merchandise, it's increased in value, which may be of use to you as Christmas approaches. Okay, I'm going to do a little sidestep into some video game related material. Now, it's 20 years since the release of a game called Half-Life 2. This was a seminal release, a PC game that took narrative first-person gaming into a new dimension, essentially. It elevated the concept. It introduced a physics engine into the whole idea of a first-person shooter. It's a puzzle game as well. There are slight cerebral challenges, unlocking doors, unlocking other stuff, whatever. And there's lots of monster shooting. Now, at this moment in time, I haven't been able to check this properly, but I understand that there is a new version of the game with polished graphics and some sequel, what we call chapters, folded into the game on Steam. But there is also, on YouTube, a two-hour documentary about the making of Half-Life 2. And it's a very, very interesting watch. Half-Life 2's aesthetic, certainly for the cityscapes, was based in Eastern Europe. So there's a lot of material about why that was chosen. And there were other locations in the game as well, initially, for the planned release, that were removed. There's creature designs, all sorts of design material feature in this documentary. It's a very well produced documentary, I should add, for what's essentially a video game. Now, I say that and you think, well, yeah, it's just a video game. But actually, this is an increasing trend with games, because this isn't the only big video game release that gets documentaries or re-release. Last year or the year before, a collection called Atari 50 was released. This combines classic Atari arcade and console games on a single cartridge or for Nintendo Switch, or I think it was a download code, although there may have been physical copies for PlayStation 4 and 5 and Xbox. It's also available on PC. But it combines games with documentary interviews about each game and the development and evolution of Atari. It's a fascinating collection. Now, I'm going to just put this out there. I picked up Atari 50, which has received a couple of updates recently with added games and added value-added material, as our friend Gareth Cavana refers to it correctly. I bought Atari 50 on the Switch for £19.99. That gave me over 100 games and documentary clips and material, the type of material you would get in a Doctor Who DVD extra, PDFs and material of design equipment, design works, that kind of thing. That was in the Atari 50. Now, there's a new one that's just come out called Tetris Forever. I'll give you the links to relevant show note material for this so you can follow them up. The new one, Tetris Forever, is from the same publisher as Atari 50 and goes along the same lines. It has a history of Tetris. Features Tetris games, features interviews. It's a very interesting new way, I think, of using game consoles to appreciate the development and the evolution of the games that we play. Now, you may not be a big gamer. You may have some affection for old games. I certainly do. I run a regular newsletter called Retro Gamer Base, which drops the latest retro gaming news and reviews into your inbox. So this is something that's very interesting to me. But there appears to be the retro gaming world has basically grown over the past five years, since just before the lockdown years and to now, where we've got a state where the Atari company, where it was a joke 5 or 10 years ago, is now putting out great compilations of its old material, licensed hardware and merch, basically. Everything from jackets and shoes to, get this, Atari joystick, shot glasses and decanters. So that's a thing now. Anyway, the point is the Atari, the retro gaming thing is exploding. And this material, this type of material that we're seeing with Half-Life 2 and Atari 50 and Tetris Forever, I think this is a very useful and valuable way to relate the evolution of these titles and these gaming companies. And I think it brings the whole DVD extra thing into the world of video games. Now, these aren't the first games to have, behind-the-scenes extras or what have you, packaged in a special edition or whatever. But I think they've been very well received. I would not be surprised if this starts to become the norm for, certainly for retro collections and possibly a few AAA releases as years go on.
Unsurprisingly, there's a bit of music news in this week's Castorbis. And we're going back to Led Zeppelin. I mentioned a movie, documentary, Becoming Led Zeppelin. This is a feature-length doc about the origins of Led Zeppelin. And it is going to be finally released in the new year, in February, February the 7th to be specific, in the US and Canada on IMAX theatre screens. This information has been shared to the LedZeppNews.com website. This is their exclusive. They also previously found a leaked poster for the film. There's been a couple of pre-release screenings, one of which was held recently in Toronto on an IMAX screen, and another one was held last week in Nashville, also on IMAX. So this thing is now coming together. It is now going to be screened in cinemas in North America and Canada. In cinemas in North America, at least, if not getting a wider cinematic distribution. I suspect it will probably come out in a few places and then end up on one of the key streaming platforms soon after that. I am really looking forward to seeing this. Okay, do you ever go on a holiday or just wander around London and happen across a location that you recognise? Well, a few months ago, I was in Prague for the Dance World Cup. I wasn't dancing. My son was dancing, and he did well. He came second place in one of his dances. And we spend a lot of time in the city. It's an absolutely beautiful city, Old Prague. And I was looking around, I was wandering around quite often, and I was seeing locations that looked familiar. Now, there's a whole list of movies that were shot in Prague. Mission Impossible, the original Mission Impossible. Spider-Man Far From Home, that's the one. Peter Parker and his classmates are on holiday in Europe. The Illusionist has scenes shot in Prague. Les Miserables has a lot of Prague. The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe was shot mainly in New Zealand, but a bit of it was in Prague, as was the sequel, The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. The Bourne Identity used Prague. Casino Royale used Prague. Snowpiercer filmed in Prague. A whole load of places are filmed in Prague. And, you know, if you're wandering around, it does feel a very familiar city, as does London. Now, what I'm going towards here has nothing to do with Prague. It's only a tiny bit to do with London. But someone has shared on Facebook, and I wanted to share this. There's a page or a group, big band, called the British Film Location Spotters Group, which, yeah, that's quite an interesting topic. There's lots of places in the UK being used for film recording, TV recording, obviously. Some scenes are, of course, more popular, more memorable, more, there's that word again, iconic than others. One such took place on Mentmore Close in Kenton in northwest London in 1974-1975, I'm not sure of the exact filming date. The TV episode that it was from went out in 1975. It's an episode called Gourmet Night from a little-known sitcom called Fawlty Towers. This is the episode in which Basil Fawlty's car isn't working properly, and he ends up giving it a damn good thrashing with a branch. Someone's tracked down the location, I think on Google Maps, I'm not entirely sure, on Google Street View, and there's very little difference as these things go. The main difference, I would say, is that there appears to be a pair of bollards erected on the corner where Basil Fawlty thrashes his car, leading one to suppose that maybe lots of people have been over to Mentmore Close, parked their car slightly on the pavement and hit it with a branch, and the long-suffering occupant of the house on the corner has got a bit fed up with this and contacted the local council. So
In short, it is no longer possible to park your car on the corner of Mentmore Close in Kenton, northwest London, and hit it with a branch. Patreon time. So if you're listening to this on Patreon, hello, you got this early. You got it ad-free, and you got it standard length, but other episodes may be a bit longer. And if you are one of our Patreon listeners, then I would really encourage you to share these benefits with your friends and network, your group of fans and friends and, you know, whatever. Share the fact that you can get this podcast early, ad-free, and occasionally a bit longer or with extra episodes on Patreon at patreon.com/Casturbis. This is, of course, the only way to enter competitions that we're running. We're currently running a giveaway for Red Dwarf Discovering the TV series, which follows our interview with Tom Selinski a few weeks ago. That giveaway is ending in 2 days' time, on the 22nd of November. So let people know that they can enter that competition by joining. Our Patreon is free. We have paid tiers, but that doesn't give you any extra podcasts. It just gives you a couple of interesting enhancements. And we'd really like more and more people to be on Patreon so we can communicate information more easily rather than, you know, Facebook, which is very busy, Twitter/X, or any of its alternatives, which are very kind of easy to miss updates on. Patreon is our new home in many ways. So if you can get your friends and family who are interested in classic TV, classic movies, retro stuff, and Doctor Who, of course, to come to us through Patreon, remember, it is free. It just needs an email address. You get a free sign up, and you can then get the podcasts that way early. They'll be out a few days later on Spotify, Amazon, Apple Podcasts, etc. But the early ad-free version is only on Patreon. It's a very fascinating documentary running to just under 36 minutes on YouTube. This is called This Is What Victorian People Sounded Like. It is a collection of phonograph recordings made using Thomas Edison's early tinfoil phonograph. There are many famous voices from the Victorian era that have been preserved using this technique. Robert Browning, Arthur Sullivan, Prime Minister Gladstone, and even Queen Victoria. But there is one in particular that I think is quite particularly interesting, particularly in light of some current geopolitical events. So I'm going to bring up this bit. Okay, so what you're about to hear is the voice of Florence Nightingale recorded on a phonograph. Isn't that incredible? That was recorded in the 1880s, and that is the voice of Florence Nightingale. This technique is, obviously, it's not, you know, it's not CD quality by any stretch of the imagination. Although, listening to that and comparing it to some of the old blues records that I listen to from time to time, there's not an awful lot of sound quality difference there. These phonographs were made from tin foil, and, you know, later records were made from, obviously we use vinyl now, but there was so older records from the sort of the 78 era were made from shellac resin. There have been other materials used instead of vinyl, PVC, and polystyrene, incredibly. They're presumably lighter. These days, interestingly, I've discovered there's a 180-gram records of vinyl records. That these are sort of premium records. And I've had a discussion with some people about this. They don't have any superior sound quality at all. The only thing they're likely to do is sit slightly heavier on the turntable. Whether or not that is a benefit to you or not, I don't know. But there is no improvement in sound quality with those heavier vinyl records that you can get these days. So, yeah, who thought you'd be listening to this podcast and hear the voice of Florence Nightingale? Okay, a little bit of a catch-up now. A few weeks ago, I told you that there was a event, the Blackpool Film Collectors Convention. That took place this past weekend. And the Film is Fabulous team, whose Facebook page I refer to regularly, sold most of the items that were offered on behalf of two estates. That means that rare material, movies, TV episodes, etc., have gone into the hands of collectors. What the collectors then do with that material is really up to them. However, there's another aspect to this update. Film is Fabulous reported a couple of days ago that they spent the last week examining almost 100 vintage episodes of television from the collection of a man called David Moore. These are rare episodes broadcast in the 50s and 60s, and some of them have been offered for sale. These includes 16mm film prints of episodes of things as... Now, these are things that you wouldn't know existed if you never saw them or never heard of them when watching telly in the 1950s, which many of you won't have been. Douglas Fairbanks Jr. presents Errol Flynn Theatre. There's Africa Patrol as well, which you may have heard of, Sailor of Fortune. There's a whole list of these things. My interest in these things is largely one of fascination. I'm not spending money on them. I spend enough money on retro games as it is to get anywhere involved with retro films, classic films, and film archiving. But this is, again, this shines a light into this quite interesting world of rare film collecting. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm glad my dad isn't aware of this stuff, because he'd be spending a lot of money on this. Hi, Dad. So that's what's going on. So Film is Fabulous. Again, I do mention it quite often. It's a page that you can like on Facebook and you get updates from it. It's not a group, so there's no sort of membership requirement. But just to finish off, the same page, they will be attending the upcoming Missing Believed Wiped Festival at the BFI South Bank in London on Saturday, December the 7th. And there'll be an array of material being shown at the event, including one of the three Basil Brush shows recovered by the Film is Fabulous team. This was originally broadcast in November 1970, the 20th of November 1970. So as I record this, wow. As I record this, that is 54 years ago. This was an episode hosted by Derek Folds as Mr. Derek, and featured the pop group Picketty Witch. Now, I got slightly distracted there because I've just noticed that Sir Michael Palin will be among the guests and will introduce the complete and utter history of Britain, a series that was believed to have been lost until relatively recently. You can find more information about that event at the whatson.bfi.org.uk. And you know what? I'll give you the link to that in the show notes. Okay, so in a few minutes' time, I'm going to be commencing a recording with James concerning the Box of Delights. It is 40 years old this year, and there's a new DVD release, about DVD and Blu-ray release, a 40th anniversary edition, and I've interviewed Chris Chapman concerning that release and some of the extras on it. That's going to be coming along next week, I think, towards the end of November. But we're going to James and I are going to be recording a podcast to accompany that. But there's been some uncertainty concerning the screening of the serial for its 40th anniversary on the BBC. It's kicking off with a double bill of episodes, episodes 1 and 2, on Saturday the 7th of December from 7:10pm on BBC 4. And this will then continue to the end of the serial in subsequent weeks. So that's good news. And don't forget to look out for our special podcast concerning the Box of Delights coming soon. I'll be back next week with another weekly Casterbras edition. Until then, it's goodbye from me.